I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to America's Best Baseball Podcast. We take you behind the scenes in and around Major League Baseball with former big league manager Kevin Kennedy and veteran baseball broadcaster Rich Herrera. This is the only weekly podcast hosted by someone like Kennedy who played, coached, and managed in pro ball. So we can take you into the manager's office for a real insider's view of baseball alongside a veteran baseball broadcaster like Herrera who has covered the game from coast to coast. So let's talk some baseball with your hosts. Here they are. The Skipper, Kevin Kennedy, and Rich Herrera.
Thanks for joining us, everybody, on America's Best Baseball Podcast. That's the Skipper, Kevin Kennedy. I'm Rich Herrera. Let's get right to it. The baseball gods did us a favor, Skip, because we got a lot of baseball to talk about today.
There's always a lot of baseball to talk about, Rich. Yeah, and it just, you know, it starts getting heated up here at this time of the summer when teams are battling for first place or teams that are down or are starting to beat teams that they're not supposed to beat. Guys get heated up, and bottom line is it shows that players care about winning.
Let's start in San Francisco with the Marlins and the Giants. Last week, Evan Longoria gets hit by a pitch, broken hand, out 8 weeks, and that was against the Marlins. This time out, Dan Straley got run along with Don Mattingly after the Giants and the Marlins were throwing back and forth at each other. Straley gets run after Buster Posey gets hit by a pitch. Let's take a listen.
And Buster gets drilled. And that's all for Straley. Straley has been ejected, and so has Don Mattingly. And here comes Bruce Bochy out. But Bochy goes out to the home plate area and is intercepted by the crew chief. And now Bochy starts pointing and shouting at Straley. It's like Bochy wants a piece of Straley himself. I don't know, maybe Straley thinks that Lewis Brinson is a superstar. In the eye-for-an-eye world of retaliation, if you're going to retaliate, usually you go after somebody who's in the same situation as your guy who got hit. That's not Lewis Brinson. I must have missed the All-Star game that he made, or the World Series that he was the MVP of, or even the league that he was the MVP of. That is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. So Straley, maybe Straley just wanted out of the game.
So Skip, let's talk about this because Straley gets run, Mattingly gets run, neither one of them are happy. The Giants starter Derek Rodriguez had plunked a Marlins center fielder Lewis Brinson in the second inning. So Andy Fletcher gives warnings to both sides and then they get run.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing with Evan Longoria, I mean, I'm not sure that was intentional. I actually watched that game. I've been watching as many games as I can around the country, and I'm always curious what anybody in the NL West does, simply because I still have a job with the Dodgers doing some games on radio, and so I'm curious what all the teams in the West do. So wherever they're at, I follow them. So I did see that Marlin Giants game. The Marlins have been playing well against some of the West teams. They beat the Dodgers and played them very well. They beat the Giants 3 out of 4 in Miami. But seeing that play, Rich, I don't know what you thought about it. I didn't think it was intentional. I think what we're finding out today, and I want to say this before we continue, in spring training, I was talking to Mark Gubaza, who was a great pitcher in his own right, especially with Kansas City. Now an Angels broadcaster. And we were playing the Angels at the end of spring training, and he was in the booth. We've been good friends for a long time. And he was talking about something that I thought was very intriguing, and he's right. He said, you're going to see more guys, Kevin, get hit and get hurt, breaking their wrists, their hands, than maybe ever before. And I said, I have a feeling you're right. I said, I think I know why you're right. Why are you saying that? He says, because more pitchers are getting tired of giving up these home runs. So they're going to be pitching up in the zone, and they're going to be pitching in the zone more than ever before. They try to pitch up, and they miss locations, and they miss out of the heart of the plate, and guys are hitting home runs against them. So you're going to see a lot more guys trying to go inside and tie these guys up. You've got the plate being crowded by most hitters today, especially most power hitters. And pitchers are not going to let their arms or hands get extended to get through that baseball. And I'll be darned if that very same day, about a day later is when Justin Turner got hit playing the Oakland A's right at the end of spring training. He got hit on the wrist.
It's not intentional. It's not, I'm not brushing him back. I'm not giving him chin music. But let's stop for just a second, Skip. Let's play baseball 101 like we'd like to do on this podcast.
All right.
Okay, explain to me the difference. Because I think people have heard the old saying from Gibson, hey, half the plate's mine, half the plate's yours. I'm just going to keep you guessing which one. But explain to me what you mean by if I miss and I leave it over the heart of the plate when I'm throwing outside, inside, and how baseball has changed and how guys dive over the plate.
Well, Rich, I mean, with the armor that guys wear today, I mean, on their wrists, on their elbows, on their feet, on their ankles, you'll see guys that aren't afraid of standing on top of the plate. You know, that stuff didn't happen back in the Bob Gibson days. Guys didn't wear armor like that on their hands and on their elbows and all that. So they weren't that afraid of today's game. They're not that afraid of getting hit. Obviously you don't want to get hit and get hurt, but guys are gambling. They said, hey, you know, if I get on top of the plate and I can hit some home runs and get some mistakes, I'm going to get paid. And that's really what's going on in today's game the last few years.
A lot of divers.
A lot of guys are diving. A lot of guys, even guys that don't dive, they'll have that back foot on home plate, like Justin Turner, who has an open stance. But they got the back foot right on home plate. And so as a catcher, I'm speaking from a catcher's perspective, I always felt that anybody that had their back foot close to home plate, they had the plate coverage. If I pitched them away, that ball to them was right down the middle. So consequently,
I got to back them up.
I got to go inside. And remember, there's not much margin for error inside. If you miss inside off the plate and the guy's on top of it, he's got a chance to get hit. If you hit your spot, yeah, you might get a strike or you might jam a guy, but there's not much margin for error. If you go away from a guy, a right-handed hitter, let's say right-handed pitcher, and you miss, well, it's just a ball. Nobody's getting hit because the ball's, you know, 3 feet away from him. So that's one of the reasons I think why so many guys today are getting hit, and I think you're seeing so many broken wrists, especially on, you know, Turner was one, Longoria now is another, and I think we're going to see more, unfortunately. And here's the other reason why. A lot of guys today don't know how to pitch inside. And what I mean by that, they're up in the big leagues so fast, they don't spend 5 or 6 years in the minor leagues. They definitely don't spend 6 years in AAA like I did back in the 80s. I mean, in late 70s and 80s, I spent 6 years in AAA as a catcher because...
Right, but see, how many guys, you know, Skip, how many guys do we see in the last decade, live on that outside slider that has just been kryptonite to everybody. They throw it, they chase it, and the reason they chase it is because it looks so good because they're on top of the plate. Now, old school baseball will be, what am I going to do? If I throw outside, low and outside, where should I come back next? Up and in, keep that hitter off balance. But because we've had this thing in baseball, and you and I have been talking about this for years, hey, guys, throw inside. Throw inside like Gibson. Throw inside like Roger Clemens. Roger Clemens, honestly, is the last pitcher that lived inside. He used to dust back Alex Rodriguez the first time he faced him in a game, and then Alex Rodriguez was bailing out half the time because you knew Clemens was going to come inside. Randy Johnson would come inside. They would intimidate a hitter. Now hitters stand up there. They don't have a care in the world because they know no one's going to come inside.
Don't forget about Pedro Martinez.
But Pedro Martinez did it, and you had him. He was one of your players, Skip. He was called a headhunter. Roger Clemens was called a headhunter. They were called nasty. They were actually, people accused them of cheating, it being bad guys because they lived on the inside of the plate, backing hitters away. And now, last 5 years, if I come within even a baseball off the plate inside, you're glaring at me like you want to come throw down.
Yeah, and that's the difference to the game today. I mean, everybody knew that Clemens was a guy that wasn't afraid to hit you if you were crowding the plate. Everybody knew that Randy Johnson would do the same. Everybody knew back in the day that Drysdale would do it and Gibson. Everybody knew that Pedro was doing it. A lot of people felt Pedro would do it intentionally. Pedro says, I never tried to hit anybody in the plate.
He would get his half of the inside of the plate.
Well, he would even do more than that. He actually went after. Whenever they play the Yankees, especially the Red Sox, right, he would actually hit Derek Jeter on purpose to start the game. Just, and he would set the tone. He wasn't trying to hurt him, but he would go way inside, and if he hit him, he hit him. And that was his mentality, because he wanted to live away, you know, the rest of the game. The outside part of the plate was going to be his, and he'll be darned if he was going to let anybody get on the plate and take the inside part away, too.
We got to play baseball 101. He wants that outside of the plate. For people that don't understand, then why does he throw inside of Derek Jeter if he's worried about the outside of the plate?
Because he just wanted to set the tone for the rest of the lineup to say, hey, he'll hit anybody. Don't be diving. He'll hit anybody. He's not afraid to hit anybody.
What was the reaction for the Yankees and Jeter when he would know that, listen, I'm going to walk up there and he's gonna dust me?
Jeter took it pretty professionally. He took it as long as he didn't get him up high or hit him in the wrist or something. You know, you try to get guys low when you did that, meaning not that the ribs can't be broken, because they certainly can, but you didn't try to hit guys in the head. I mean, you didn't try to hit them in the wrists and break their wrists. I mean, if they have that kind of control, then they should be able to pitch inside correctly. Let's just put it that way.
And there is a way of doing it correctly.
Yeah, there is. There is, Rich. And I think the game today is north and south as far as pitching. And what that means is the game used to be side to side, east and west. You go, you know, when the umpires weren't under the scrutiny they are now, and you know this because you went to umpire school, you could get the outside corner and just go back to the Braves days under Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and Tommy Glavine. You could sit outside if you were a catcher and you were fit. Let's say you're Greg Maddux and you had a right-handed hitter up there. You could sit outside as a catcher about 6 inches, and if you hit that spot and Greg could hit it, it would be called a strike. So in other words, a 17-inch wide plate would become 23. That no longer is the case.
And now it's an acceptable pitch, because if you live out there, but he would call it, that umpire would call it consistently, because they knew how good Maddux was at finding exactly where he was throwing the baseball.
Yeah, if you didn't move the glove as a catcher and hit his spot, they would get the call.
This is pre Questech ZE system.
You bet. Let me tell you, Sandy Alomar Jr. is with the Cleveland Indians as a coach now. When he caught Dennis Martinez in Cleveland, when Cleveland had all those great teams in the 90s, he would sit, Dennis would have him sit facing a right-handed hitter with his left shin guard, his left knee on the outside corner on the black of home plate. That's how far Sandy would sit outside, and Dennis would hit the spot, and a lot of times the ball would be called a strike, and it was a shame. I do agree that the book rule should be called, which includes the high pitch, by the way. The problem that's happening today, why pitchers are getting frustrated.
Get ready for this, everybody.
Is at the top part of the strike zone. Maybe, Rich, you can explain what that's supposed to be.
Right.
But the top part of the strike zone is very inconsistent. Now, I've been watching the Dodgers and Cubs the last couple of days on TV, right? I'm not on the road trip. One umpire, and I won't say the name, it doesn't matter. One umpire in the first game called the top part of the zone. In the second game, the top part of the zone wasn't called. The umpire in the first game had a very wide zone. And the players, several guys got kicked out in that game. Both sides were getting called the same way. And so there was inconsistencies there. And yes, the umpires, even though they get graded, they still see the strike zone because they're human beings. They see it the way they see it. Now, that because the top part of the zone is not being called, the only chance a pitcher has throwing up is, well, get a swing and a miss, because he's not going
to
get a called strike up there.
Okay, yeah, so let me jump in here with you.
Yeah.
What's an acceptable pitch in your mind? Because people talk about the inconsistency of the strike zone in whether it's a strike on the black or outside. For your mind, how much of the width of the baseball needs to hit the plate for it to be a hittable pitch that you call a strike?
On the outside corner, you mean? Black of
or
home
inside,
plate?
Or inside.
Just the black of home plate. If it hits the edge of the black of home plate, or a baseball width, in other words, that's a strike.
So how wide is a baseball?
Baseball is what, 3.5 inches?
There's that. There's that 3.5 inches on the outside, 3.5 inches on the inside. They're taught that if part of that baseball nicks over the plate, and we're talking about an inch to 2 inches at a baseball moving at 100 miles an hour.
Correct.
They're calling on that. Those pitches right there that you say that you saw on television, and I believe you, that they were inconsistent or they were inconsistent from day to day. But if it's just that little bit of the outside and maybe this umpire is going to give you a third of the baseball, the umpire the next day wants 2/3 of the baseball.
Correct.
The umpire the next day wants the entire baseball. What they call that in baseball, in umpire language, is it a hittable pitch? How much of it was over the strike zone, and could you hit it? Baseball encourages them. I'm going to call that a strike. The other part of this,
and I agree with that, by the way.
And this is my favorite part. So when they get graded, they look, was it a hittable pitch? And if it's outside, that's when they have to answer to their supervisor, how come you missed this pitch? The other part of this, and we've had this discussion before, Kevin, on satellite radio, here's what happened. I'm sitting in the press box talking to an umpire supervisor, and I ask, when I start asking about umpiring, so I asked the question that everybody asked, what we're talking about right now. How come you never call a high strike? And he looked at me and gave me a smart aleck remark. He goes, well, if it was high, then it's not a strike.
I've had many umpires tell me that when I used to go argue. That must be a line that goes around umpire school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like the line for broadcasters. Two broadcasters are sitting in the hotel lobby. A woman of questionable morals comes up and says, hey, I'll do anything for $50. And they both look great. You can do the postgame show tomorrow.
All right. Well, that's so what umpires would tell me, honestly. Yeah. Well, you said high strike. I said, yeah, but there is a strike zone that's high, and there's a strike zone that's a low pitch. So don't be obnoxious with me. And I would go right back at
it. And by the way, the umpire, from the manager sitting in the dugout, the only thing that he could tell is up and down. He can't tell side to side from the vantage point. So that's why managers and players will always harp about the high strike and the low strike and whether it's getting called or not.
Correct.
So by the book, the letters, the armpits are the top of the strike zone. So when you're standing there and fans will look like I said this, you guys never call the strike at the armpits. You never call the strike at the letters. So this umpire supervisor says, Richie, stand up. So I stand up and he goes, get in your stance. So I get in my stance. He goes, all right, I'm going to put my hand right here where you think the top of the strike zone is. Is that right? And he puts about for the letters. I said, okay. He goes, now I want you to take a stride. And I want you to swing, and then we'll look again. So I took my stride. I took like maybe, 6 inches of a stride. I brought my hands. I loaded. I came through. And he goes, all right, now get to the point of contact. I got to the point of contact. He goes, do you remember where our hands were before? And he kept his hands right there. He goes, look where my hand is now. And I'm like, wow, that strike at the letters is now at my shoulders and my chin because I can press down to stride forward. He goes, what we call is, 3 baseballs above the belt is the top of the strike zone because as you go to swing and you compact down, it's not where you're standing. It's where you're trying to make contact with the baseball.
Correct.
That's why we never call that at the letters.
Correct. Yeah, it's in the book rule will say, and I'm going to remember this just off the fly, even though I have the book with me every day in my briefcase. It is the midpoint between the belt and the lower part of the armpit. Correct,
yeah.
Rich?
The midpoint.
And that's basically what the umpires will say for them. It's basically 3 baseballs above the belt. So
as you stand, because you're gonna shorten out. I was like, wow, I don't know much about this game, and I've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go back to something though.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this forever. Pitchers, throw inside, be aggressive. Don't stand there and let these guys get so comfortable, you're not gonna last. We've said it forever, Kevin.
Right.
Does baseball have the intestinal fortitude to allow pitchers to reclaim the inside part of the plate and have hitters go back to being a little itchy when they're going up to the plate? The great Willie Mays knew if he was facing Big D, Don Drysdale, or Gibson, he was going to get knocked down, and it was just part of the game. Now, with all this money, Turner getting hurt, Longoria getting hurt, does baseball have the intestinal fortitude to allow these pitchers to reclaim the inside of the plate knowing that multi-million-dollar superstars are going to get hurt in the process?
Well, that's a great question, Rich. I really don't know, but I like to see baseball make some changes in a lot of different ways. And let's stay on the strike zone today because we're going to do a couple of shows a week for as long as we possibly can, as long as we're both healthy, I think.
Exactly.
We'll do this show. So there's always a lot to talk about. It doesn't have to be done all in one show because I got feelings about the shift and everything else that's going on in baseball. But the bottom line is I think until pitchers show that they have command inside, that they're just not throwing inside, that they're actually pitching inside, and there's a difference. And I know sometimes people don't want to hear guys from the old days, but Sandy Koufax said something that was very profound many years ago. He said, you don't throw, you pitch. He said, you throw inside to pitch away. Now, that was his day.
Right.
Back then.
Hard stuff in, soft stuff away.
Yeah, but he said throw. He didn't pitch inside. He threw inside. In other words, he did exactly what we've been talking about the last 20 minutes.
I might waste a pitch inside because
exactly.
I want to make sure you're not too comfortable.
Exactly. He didn't pitch inside. He said, I threw inside, but I pitched away.
And to that's set up that pitch.
And that's where the game has changed. Now guys are throwing inside. They're not pitching inside. They think they're pitching inside by throwing a ball inside on Evan Longoria when they have no idea where the ball is going. It gets away from him with a little two-seam run, and it hits him in the wrist and breaks his wrist. That's the problem with today's game, because guys don't know how to actually – most guys don't know how to actually pitch inside. They'll go inside because they're taught in the minor leagues. Hey, you got to pitch
inside. This is how far my ball runs.
Yeah, you got to go inside. You got to pitch inside. You got to pitch inside. But how do you pitch inside effectively? Because if you make a mistake out of the over the plate inside and you're afraid to hit somebody, you're gonna give up a home run in today's game. That's the problem.
I talked to Billy Ripken about this in bunting.
Yeah.
That why don't we have good bunters in the big leagues? Because all these guys hit 4 and 5. None of them ever bunted in the minor leagues.
They never bunt.
Why do we have guys that can't throw inside? Because they were never asked to throw stuff. They throw
Correct.
Breaking stuff. They throw sliders.
Right.
They throw filthy stuff away that people would chase, and that's how they got
they
to the big
They don't even
leagues.
Do bunting in batting practice. They might come out early and bring a few guys out that they know are bunters that need to bunt, mostly pitchers in the National League. But they don't even practice that in their pregame batting practice drills.
Watch it half-ass when it happens.
Yeah, they don't do it anymore.
They don't
practice bunting.
Well, here's the other part is throwing inside. There's a big difference between throwing inside to back you off, to get you uncomfortable, and
right.
trying to hit somebody.
That's
so
right.
when Straley hit Buster Posey, which started this conversation, he hit it professionally in the shoulder blade, in the arm. There's a certain way you go about it. But here's the other part of all this, that everybody gets all sideways because if I'm going to hit you, it's part of the game. There's unwritten rules in baseball. If I'm going to back you out, it's part of the game. There's unwritten rules in baseball. But there's also that fact that there's some guys that have no idea where the ball's going, and when they try to come up and in or they try to back you off the plate, you buzz the tower, you throw it their head, and all of a sudden now five guys are going to get hit and hurt.
That's exactly right, and that's the problem with what's going on in today's baseball. Guys that throw hard are going to get to the big leagues quicker than anybody else. It's not guys that throw 87 and have great command. We still have a few of those guys, but those guys are going to have to earn their way to come up. You mentioned, by the way, Derek Rodriguez.
Yes.
Who, by the way, is Pudge's son and has done a really good job. He doesn't throw like Pudge. He doesn't throw hard. He throws 89 to 90, 91 tops.
So going back in this game, Longoria had been hit by Straley last week. Giants starter Derek Rodriguez plunks Lewis Brinson in the second inning, and then Buster Posey gets hit, and that's when Mattingly got run. By the way, Mike Kruko, who we both know, Giants broadcaster, in the the ESPN story, said that he had heard Mattingly telling Posey, who homered the first inning, "You're next," as he was leaving the field in San Francisco, thinking that this is absolutely intentional.
Yeah, but then Posey, who's very professional, discounted that.
He said, I don't know, it sure seemed that way, is his response.
He said it seemed that way, but he goes, "That's not what I heard." That's what he
right.
said. I'm
right.
paraphrasing,
and that's
what
way,
he said.
By the way, thumbs up for Buster Posey for keeping that in-house. What goes on in the field stays in the field.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what he did. So, listen, Don Mattingly comes from the old school, meaning he comes from the days when he came up in the game. That, you know, just he played with Derek Jeter. And when Derek first came up, Don was near the end of his career. But Donnie played, you know, a good, 10 years before that.
Right.
And so he played for the Billy Martins of the world. He played for those guys. I mean, Billy's the one that put him at second base for one inning, for crying out loud. and Billy Martin, the Lou Piniellas. The Lou Piniellas, the Billy Martins, the Tommy Lasordas, those types of managers are not around anymore. Those types of managers would be the types of guys that say, hey, if they hit one of our guys, we're going to retaliate. Now, most managers don't need to say that. Like, for example, you mentioned Roger Clemens.
Good point. Yes.
I didn't have to tell Roger Clemens.
We've talked about this on satellite radio before, right?
Yeah.
Roger knew. And by the way, there's this whole thing, and some managers will go out there, hey, you need to go plunk somebody and stand up, because if they're going to throw inside at our guys all day long and think that we're not going to come back in and police the game ourselves, we're going to be in big trouble. So if you had a guy like Clemens, what would he do?
Oh, Clemens, believe me, Clemens took the game in his own hands. I mean, there was a time that I actually told Clemens not to hit somebody because there had already been a warning thrown out by Tim McClellan. And he ends up going out there and doing it anyway, and only because I had gone out to Tim and said, hey, he's got to pitch inside. That's part of his game. And boom, next time he went out there, he hit somebody. It's a long story. That's why I'm not repeating it again, because I've said it so many times. And maybe sometime later in our podcast, one of these days we'll bring that story up again about some of those days. But bottom line is Clemens took it into his own hands. And by doing that, the players took control of the game. The umpires didn't have to take control of it. The managers didn't have to take control of it. The players took control of it.
One of yours, you hit one of mine. You go to first base professionally. It's over, and we both know, okay.
Exactly.
This is over. I talked to Don Zimmer about this, the late, great Don Zimmer.
Yeah.
Who had been hit in the head, almost killed by a beanball. And I asked him about throwing inside and hitting people. He goes, Richie, I couldn't do it. I know what it's like. I just could not bring myself to put someone else in jeopardy like that. And my players knew I wasn't going to ask. They did it on their own, and he was glad they did.
Yeah, and again, most players that I've ever managed, I mean, all the guys that I've ever managed, from minor leagues to big leagues, Rich, I can't think of one that said, I'm going to get this guy in the head. I've heard players say, I'm going to get him. But whenever I would hear that rumbling, I would say, get him low. Don't hurt him. Don't hurt him. I would always say that.
Because the other part is if you come up high and you escalate the tensions, guess what? Your player is going to get hit next on your teammate, and he's going to wear one because you're an idiot.
And then they're going to try to hurt you too. You're not only going to wear one. They're going to try to hurt you. So that's why, you know, when the retaliation started, it was always, I think on both sides, it was always, don't get him up high. Don't get him up high. Get him low. Get him in the ribs. Get him in the knee. Get him in the thigh.
Hit him in the butt.
Just let them know that we're not going to take it when you knock our guys down or hit our guys and hurt our guys.
Because what happens if you don't retaliate back?
Well, you lose respect to the club. The players, the everyday players start saying, oh, the pitchers don't have our backs. You know, we're on an island. We're by ourselves now. You know, we're going to keep taking it. And the other thing is, when you do retaliate, you can't just get an everyday player. You got to get their star. You got to get the Buster Posey's.
Wait a second. Do you get their star, or do you get someone of like value? So if I hit your 200 hitting shortstop, am I escalating it if I go get your 40 home run first baseman?
No, you know, no, not necessarily. Well, Longoria is really one of the key guys for the Giants. You know,
right.
So if you're going to retaliate and get one of Miami's guys, it's not going to be, you know, their guy hitting 170. They're going to get somebody of significant value that will affect their ball club being
because
out.
Because that sends the message.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
There's one other part to this that we need to throw out. But before we do that, I want to go on. Just don't go down the rabbit hole with me too far, Kevin. I'm just going to make a statement. This is why I hate bat flips. We've talked about how you can't lose respect, you can't lose face, you can't do any of this stuff, and you've got a whole bunch of alpha males, competitive men, and I bat flip and kind of show you up, and you take umbrage at this. That's why I think the whole bat flip thing, and we could do a whole podcast on this, when you do something like that, or you do the high five, or you do the fist bump after you get a hit, that pitcher over there that just gave up a hit and is now embarrassed in front of his teammates and 50,000 people, he's not going to take lightly to you high-fiving or doing something while you're standing there. He's mad that you got a hit. He's mad that he gave up a hit. And now that you're celebrating in front of him, these are alpha males. They're going to get mad, and they're gonna do something they probably wouldn't do if you just would have got your base hit and walked to first base.
And I think it really depends on the demeanor and personality of the pitcher. If you did that against Clemens or you did that against Pedro, no doubt they were going to answer. But I've had other guys that didn't have that in their personality. They just weren't going to do it. And so it's not everybody that you're talking about.
But there are some.
But there are some, and those are the guys that can be scary because they're not only going to go at you, they're going to go at you to hurt you and put you out.
How about guys hurting themselves? Because this is the rest of the story. So a lot of this happened between Lewis Brinson and the Giants and Hunter Strickland, who had buzzed him after giving up a hit, and then the Giants end up losing the first game in that series. And after they were done, Hunter Strickland decides that he's upset that he had a bad game, punches his locker, breaks his hand. He's out for 8 weeks.
I just don't understand that. When I saw that, you know, the Giants just lost Evan Longoria. They just got Bumgarner back. Cueto just had a good side session. He's coming back soon. The Giants are still in the pennant race in the West. The West is still wide open. And now you lose your closer. And Melanson just came back recently. He's not ready to close yet. So now you're going to ask Tony Watson to do that, who was perfect in the eighth inning, by the way, because he gets lefties and righties out.
I saw him the other day. He looked awesome.
He's been great because he throws strikes. He's got a great changeup to get righties out. He's got enough of a good slider to get lefties out. And now you're going to ask him to close, which I'm sure he can do the job, but that shortens your bullpen. I mean, they had a really strong bullpen, especially getting Will Smith back, too. They had a really strong bullpen really developing, as strong as – maybe not as strong, Rich, as it was in the World Series years, but a very, very strong bullpen. A couple of guys from the left side, guys from the right side. Strickland had learned how to close. He learned how to throw the slider from John Smoltz last winter, where the ball would turn the corner, as John would say. And for him to do that is for me, it's a selfish act. I mean, you know, first of all, you got to be smart enough to know if you're going to do anything like that, don't throw your throwing hand, you know, your pitching hand.
You sound like Crash Davis. Which hand did you hit me with? For Christ's sakes, don't hit him drunk with your pitching hand.
It makes zero sense. I mean, we've all gotten mad. We've all been there. I've broken bats. I've slammed bats. I saw Yasiel Puig strike out and snap his bat in half like Bo Jackson used to do. And you know, some guys that tried to do that when I was playing would hurt their knee. They couldn't break it.
They couldn't do it like Bo.
But if you're going to do that and you're that mad and you're going to be dumb enough to, you know, hit something that won't move like a wall, don't do it with your pitching hand. I'll tell you a quick story. I had a guy named Vaughn Eshelman. It was a long time ago in Boston. And in spring training, he was trying to make the ball club, et cetera. Comes into the ballpark, comes into my office, and I see his left hand, pitching hand, wrapped up. And I said, what the heck happened? He said, well, I was warming my baby's milk up. My wife was sleeping in the bathroom of the hotel, and it caught on fire. And he said, so I tried to put it out with my hands. And I said, but you put it out with your pitching hand? I said, and, you know, he kind of smiled. It wasn't that funny. Fortunately, it wasn't a deep burn, and he didn't miss that much time. But, again, I guess it's just reaction. That's the way you throw. That's the way you hit from. So that's what you're going to do is just react. A fire like that, that's a little bit different than a pitcher, though, with Strickland with doing what he did. Because I just don't get that, because you got to think about people other than yourself. When you do that, to me, that's a selfish act. That doesn't show you're a man by trying to hit the wall and then breaking your hand. That just shows me that you're not that smart, really. And it's a little bit selfish. You know,
you saw that story about the player that hurt his back putting on his pants.
Well, that's Morrow.
Yeah.
Brandon Morrow. That can happen.
Just goofy things that'll sideline a player.
Yeah, Sammy Sosa 1 year sneezed in the shower and he was out for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. He went on the DL. He hurt his ribs, cracked a rib, I believe it was.
Wow.
So strange things can happen. Brandon Morrow, we didn't know yesterday, by the way, because Joe Maddon didn't say anything. It was a day-night doubleheader. And when the Dodgers were down one run in the ninth inning, it was Justin Wilson, the lefty, that came in and blew the game. Morrow wasn't even up. Well, we thought, all right, maybe he's been used a lot. He'll pitch in game two. When game two, even though the game was tied in the ninth inning, he didn't come in. He wasn't being used at all. So bottom line is, we found out this morning that he went on the DL with, he was putting his pants on. He said, I put my left leg in first and then, or was taking his pants off actually at 3 a.m. I guess he was getting back after a game, late game. And left leg worked all right. When he went for the right leg, all of a sudden his back went out and the rest is history. He's on the DL.
I wanted to bring up one last thing in our podcast this week, Mike Trout. Mike Trout, every time you look, he's doing something great. Here's the funny thing about baseball. You and I love talking about the game. We love arguing about eras and players and everything else in the sun.
Yeah.
The one thing that I'm going to get a little irritated with all this talk about Mike Trout as he closes in on 1,000 games, comparing him to the other greats. The fun thing about baseball is we used to be able to just argue, and it was my opinion versus your opinion, and neither one of us had to have a definitive answer. I just knew I'm right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
But in the age of sabermetrics and statistics, it seems like everybody has to have a final answer, and they just can't enjoy the debate when you talk about is Mike Trout one of the greatest of all times? Because the sabermetricians will come up with an algorithm that'll tell you that Mike Trout is not as good as Mickey Mantle, or Mickey Mantle is better than Willie Mays, and they have to have the final answer instead of just enjoying the debate. So let's talk about Mike Trout. Is he one of the greatest of all time?
Here's the next delivery. Trout drills one into center field. That ball's carrying in dead center. Out of here! And it was a bomb out there. It hits the batter's eye in dead center field. That was a blast there. Trout has had a two-homer night. Angels get a little bit closer, and now it's 5-3 Seattle. That thing was crushed.
I think when his time is done, he will be. Yeah, he'll be considered one of the greatest. I mean, in this era for me, he's like if I were a kid back when I was a kid back in the 60s, that's how I looked at Willie Mays. Willie Mays was the best player I've ever seen play still to this day, all the way around for me. That may change. Maybe 15 years from now, and hopefully I'm still around. And I see Mike Trout with 660 home runs like Mays and all that. Maybe I'll say Mike Trout, you know what? He might be the best player I've ever seen. If not me saying that, I'm sure it'll be some kid that's 10 years old watching Mike Trout right now, like I was when I was watching Willie Mays. And listen, I was a Dodger fan, so I'm not saying this.
And you even admit Willie Mays greatest.
He was the best player. And I loved Hank Aaron. He was great. I'm a Clemente fan big time. But in my era, and including the era now, including all the guys I manage, including all the guys I've seen to this date, he's still the best all-around player that I've ever seen. And that includes being clutch late in the game, the fear that he put in guys, winning games with his glove, winning games with catches, winning games on the bases, not just base stealing, base running, everything. I've never seen anything like it. In fact, he impacted me so much that when I finally got a chance to meet him, I had to tell him that. And, you know, Willie's still around, thank God, and but he is. So I think right now, you know, let him play a few more years, but absolutely, I think he'll go down in that era of the Mazes and the Mantles back in my day. And before that, I'm sure it was the Ted Williamses. And I don't know about Roger Hornsby. That's a little bit earlier for me. But
yeah, you've seen them all, but you didn't see the great Roger play.
Yeah, I mean, so I've never seen Babe Ruth play, too, but I know what his WAR is, you know. It's not fair to compare is what I'm saying.
Well, no, I think it's fair to compare when we do it, the eyeball test. But when you do the WAR and you have to come up with an algorithm and this and that, then you just take the fun out of it.
It's fair to compare with the eye test. It's not fair to compare based on WAR, put it that way.
Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but it's not as fun. It's not as fun if I have to definitively win the argument with you by using batting average balls in play versus left-handers on Thursday in Milwaukee. Come on, just tell me. Listen, Mike Trout can hit him a ton. He can go out and catch. He can fly. He steals bases. He's got a gun. He's one of the only five-tool players we have in the game. Absolutely, he goes up on that Mount Rushmore by the time it's all said and done. And just enjoy the moment of watching him play. Now, here's the other thing I keep hearing about as he's closing in on his 1,000th game. Is he wasting his time in his prime in Anaheim when they're not close to being the best team in baseball or making a run at winning a World Series?
No, I don't believe in that. I think he should be an Angel for life. You know, the Angels had a really good team before they lost to Ohtani, and maybe Ohtani will come back. But no, the Angels started off pretty well. They have some young guys. They lost their closer, also Middleton. So no, I don't believe that. I think Mike Trout should be a guy that should be an Angel for life.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up in our next podcast, we have our list of players that we're going to talk about each week to see if they're going to get traded before the trade deadline. We'll go through the whole list in our next podcast, but I will throw one out there. Hey, I got moved. Herrera goes to a new ball club, Skip.
Where are you going?
To the Nationals. I got all excited. I was like, I'm going to go to our nation's capital.
No, that was the start of the trading deadline. That was one of the best moves you could possibly make. I was surprised that they actually got him, and they got him this soon. It was a really good move.
Tracy Ringlesby, Hall of Fame baseball writer from Denver, told me years ago, you know the best move? It's the guy who makes it early. Because if I make the move as early as I can, like the Nationals did getting Kelvin Herrera, that means I get him an extra 3 weeks, 4 weeks longer than everybody else who makes that trade deadline deal.
Yeah, and I actually thought that the Dodgers were going to be trying to get, even though they got Kenley Jansen, I thought they'd try to get a guy like Herrera to pitch in the eighth inning. Even though the Dodgers' bullpen's been fantastic, I thought they'd try to get a guy like that because their starters are coming back now, and they're starting to get healthy. And the guys that have replaced the guys that have been hurt, including Stripling, have been doing a great job. So I thought they'd go for one really strong bullpen piece, and clearly that was the best bullpen piece on the market, and now he's gone. And that was a great move by the Nationals.
All right, that's going to do it for our podcast for today. Don't forget you can find Kevin Kennedy, MLB, on Twitter. I am RBI Rich. You can find our podcast on radio.com. You can also find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and everywhere you get your podcast. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/America's Best Baseball Podcast. We'll have another episode coming up this week for you. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on America's Best Baseball Podcast.
Thanks for joining us for America's Best Baseball Podcast. Our podcast was produced by Braden Supernant. Find us on Facebook at America's Best Baseball Podcast. You can find Kevin at Kevin Kennedy MLB on Twitter, and you can find Rich on Twitter at RBI Rich.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.